Reading with your kids.
Hola, ni hao, konnichiwa, assalamu alaikum, shalom, mahaba, ciao, bonjour, namaste, jumbo. Hey, bienvenidos, my name is Jet Li, and this is Reading with Your Kids, coming to you with love from the historical neighborhood of Reedville, the loveliest little neighborhood in all of Boston. Our mission here is all about connection, connecting kids with books, families with each other, and communities through the power of story. Every week, we're joined by incredible authors and creators whose work lights up kids' lives. You can support this mission by spreading the word. Share the show with your friends. Give us a shout-out at school. And let folks know that they can hear us on the WREB AM-FM 24/7 radio network. And they can find us on the iHeartRadio app, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Good Pods, Podcast Addict, CastBox, Audible. Pretty much anywhere you find your favorite shows, you can find Reading with Your Kids. We were really fascinating and fun show for you today. First up, Dylan and Alejandra Phillips are here to celebrate Spaghetti Monster and the Halloween party. And later in the show, Yoel Ben Israel will be here to celebrate Aleph Bet. It is the alphabet collection, and it is a fascinating conversation.
Hey guys, author Ashley Mosley here. And I teamed up with author, educator, and scientist Dr. Michael Wendelspeck. And together, we are bringing the wildlife of Belize right into your hands. Kids will meet real animals like jaguars and tapirs in Nacho House Cat and Why Did the Tapir Cross the Street? Both books beautifully illustrated by local student artists. In these books, we will learn the challenges that these animals face in the wild. For teachers, Inspired Adventures offers K-5 toolkits packed with age-appropriate activities that connect literacy, science, and conservation. Our newest book, This Birdie Told Me, landed on the shelves on September 23rd. Visit inspiredadventures.com to get your copy. Let's keep the adventure going.
Well, I'll let you know that this episode of Reading With Your Kids is also brought to you by We're Going on a Space Adventure, written by Marie Nichols. This is a Reading With Your Kids certified great read. Blasting off and speeding through space, Graham cheers to the moon and beyond. But Bracken quickly learns that Graham has a fear of flying and that he must manage control of the spaceship. On the moon, they narrowly escape a hideous monster as a crater explodes, and on Mars, they need to outrun Martian creatures or risk becoming their dinner. Hoping to find a friendlier planet, they decide to try Jupiter. Then clank, 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 something is attacking the spaceship. You and your kids are going to love this book. It's fun. It's exciting. It celebrates intergenerational friendships, and we love those. We're going on a space adventure. By Marie Nichols. It is a Reading With Your Kids certified great read. Join us right now from the Chicagoland area. They are a husband and wife team. They're the author and illustrator of Spaghetti Monster and the Halloween Party. Please welcome to the show. First up, Alejandra Phillips. Alejandra, how are you?
Oh my gosh, so great. I don't know how to follow up that intro. That's so good. I love it, Jed. No, I'm so great to be here. Thank you so much for having us.
You are very welcome. And joining Alejandra is her husband and illustrator of the book, Dylan. Dylan, how's it going?
Good, good. Thank you for having us. This is great.
Delighted to have you, folks. I'm looking into the Phillips headquarters here through the magic of technology. And Dylan has on a shirt that I am so jealous of that I need to get my hands. It says, my wife is a Puerto Rican. I fear nothing. And, dude, I can relate to that. We've already dealt with all the monsters we need to.
That's true. That's probably why our kids are called spaghetti monsters, being half Latinas, yep. Too, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying.
You know what? I think I'd be in trouble if I didn't start with you, Alejandra. So can you tell us about the spaghetti monster and what inspired this creature?
Yeah. So growing up, you know, with our kids. So my husband and I have been together since we were 16. So high school sweethearts. We got married around 23. Now we've been together 25 years. So a long time. And when we had our daughters, one of the things that they loved was spaghetti all the time. And so my husband started calling them spaghetti monsters. Like, he'd be like, come on, let's go, spaghetti monsters. Hey, spaghetti monsters. And, you know, Dylan is a graphic designer by trade, and I'm in marketing by trade. And so we just kind of decided to, like, maybe start writing down some of these fun stories. He started drawing a lot more and doing a lot of illustrations. And we were like, let's write it down. And one of the things he did was develop the little spaghetti monster creation. And from there became the story and the evolution of where he comes from. So having that little nickname for them made it, you know, funner for us to develop it. And as we've grown with our kids being, you know, young, 10 and 13, but as they've grown, they've had a lot of, you know, as you know, as a parent, a lot of issues that come up, what ifs and all the things and what's happening and how do I overcome all these things? Because as a child, everything is a lot more overwhelming than we feel as an adult from the experience that we have. And we tried to kind of dive into that aspect. And one thing that my daughter will hate that I'm going to say right now is that I studied child psychology growing up in college. And so she hates when I say that, by the way. She's like, oh, let me guess, because you studied psychology. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, but one of the things that we love is being able to put that into a book that is relatable for kiddos and for our kids in general. It's kind of just a labor of love that we thought would be a really cool story to share.
Yeah, I love that. And I love that your daughter has that wonderful Puerto Rican attitude.
Yeah. You know what? It's my fault. I will say, I love that she's a mini me. At the same time, a little bit rough.
Yeah, I'm very outnumbered. Two daughters, wife. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I'm the oldest of nine. So I got five sisters that are. So sorry, Dylan.
Ideas meal.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Dylan, you're awfully quiet. Not a surprise. But so tell me, what was it like when you first saw the spaghetti monster? Did you come into the kitchen one day and you found your kids covered with spaghetti and tomato sauce? And
yeah, we actually had Allie track down one of the old images of, I think it was Sophia, eating a plate of spaghetti, and there was pasta everywhere, on her head, on her hair, on her face, on her ears, just hanging everywhere. And from that moment, that was a spaghetti monster. Mm-hmm. And we kept using the spaghetti monster all over the place, you know, to talk about the kids, but also just for fun. Now, let's get ready for school. Grab your backpack, water bottle, lunchbox, and don't forget your spaghetti monster. And kind of get ready to go. And it would always, you know, warn her a laugh and kind of enjoy it. And it took a while of us talking back and forth about the spaghetti monster before I finally figured out, you know, maybe I should draw this. What does a spaghetti monster look like? Mm-hmm. What does a spaghetti monster look like? It was hard to figure out.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And so, Dylan, what does a spaghetti monster look like?
Well, it's kind of like a meatball. In fact, if I move my head, you can kind of see it. But it's like a little meatball with little pasta coming off of it. And it's hard to draw because what is this pasta? Is it hair? Is it arms? Is it legs? And it's everything. Mm-hmm. And it's fun to make it expressive and emotive. But yeah, so what does a spaghetti monster look like? It's a little meatball with a bunch of pasta noodles coming out of them and some sauce, of course.
I love it. Alejandra, tell me, I have a very vivid memory of my son who came into our lives first before my daughter. He just went to town with some chocolate pudding one night, and he just painted himself. He painted the kitchen, and it was, and I was like, let's have some fun. It's like, oh, you finished with that one? Here's another chocolate mm-hmm. pudding. And she wasn't, my beautiful wife wasn't all that crazy about it when she got home. What did you think when you saw the spaghetti monster in real life? Were you amused or not?
So, you know, what's funny is I think the creative side of me was very excited that she was playing with it and like getting excited about it. So for me, I thought it was funny. I mean, the cleanup afterward, I realized, you know, hey, there's a lot of nooks and crannies in this chair that's going to be covered. But at the end of the day, my thought was, and maybe that's the child psychology in me, but it was it's meant to play, right? There's times to play and there's times to learn, and let's maybe make this tactile and have fun. And I took a video of her doing it and thought it was really cute. And honestly, I was okay with it as long as I can take it off. I did buy a high chair that you could take the cover off. It's plastic, washable, and you could spray it off with a hose. So maybe that helped with the ability to not be so crazy about it.
Dylan, I remember we were – my beautiful wife and I were up in Maine. I think it was 1994, 95, before you guys were born. And we're in a restaurant, and I felt really bad because my son wanted spaghetti, and it ended up everywhere in the restaurant. And I felt so bad. I think I gave the waitress a $50 tip because it was just like, I'm sorry, dude. There's nothing we can do here.
Yeah, we immediately went from a baseline of tip to 20% period when we had kids. That was the baseline because we made a mess. I mean, there's no way around it. Even trying to clean it up, they're just so messy as kids. It's great.
The messier the table is, the higher the tip is at the end, and the bigger the apologies are from us. We're like, we're so sorry. Let me clean up. Can you pass me the broom? I'll sweep if you want me to. Especially with rice. I'm sure that you've had that happen with rice too, where it's just everywhere.
Well, just like that when I eat rice. So
that's true. Anybody, really.
So, Dylan, this must be a change for you since Alejandra said you do graphics as a profession. And I'm sure that there are folks telling you, well, I'd like you to do this and that and that. This is different. This is coming right from your imagination. Is this more fun than doing your day gig?
Yeah, yes, very much so. And in fact, a lot of the creatures and animals that are monsters rather that came into the story were just from a fun experiment. I spent October just drawing a monster a day. And a lot of them came out of that just exploration. In fact, I even had the kids kind of join in with me, and Lily has one of the monsters that's in the book is actually her monster that she made. And I tried to recreate it. It's still not as good as the original one that Lily made. And then Sophia has one as well that she inspired. So it was fun kind of creating them all. But way more difficult with no timelines, right? There's no one telling me there's a due date. We've got two other books in the works and it's, you know, there's no due date. So I can take my time, which can be a problem.
Alejandra, isn't that your job?
That is true.
I mean, that sort of goes without saying, right?
That is true. It is my job to put the timelines in place. I should have been better about it. However, we did just fully translate Spaghetti Monster to Spanish, and we just launched it on Amazon today. So we're really excited about that. But it does – he kind of has to push me a little bit because maybe that part of the Latina aspect is where sometimes I'm like, I have time. And then I might procrastinate and take a little longer than I should. So – timelines should be
we can both work on it.
Maybe we can get Sophia jump in on it and create.
She would be the one. She would be the one. She completes us.
Yep.
So Alejandra, tell us about Spaghetti Monster and the Halloween party. What's the story here?
Yeah. So the story is Spaghetti Monster decides that he's going to be going to a really awesome party by a purple monster that invites him. Perhaps one-eyed monster that's purple that does invite him to a party. And there's going to be a costume contest. And he's really excited. And he doesn't know. My camera went away. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't know, essentially, what it is that he wants to dress as. So because of that, he decides to figure out what he's going to do. And he goes through the stages of, what could it be? What could I be wearing? What could I essentially be as a spaghetti monster? So he goes and he talks to some of his monster friends, and he goes through that evolution of talking to his monster friends of what should I wear? What can I wear? Can I borrow something? Should I buy something? Through that, you'll see that, you know, he might put on some whiskers and it makes him sneeze. He tries to put a sheet on. And as Dylan mentioned, he is a spaghetti monster with sauce and a meatball. So that sheet might get a little dirty. It might not work. And something about a sheet with red sauce might not look as you know, fun and sweet. So he didn't like that. And then he goes through an evolution of, you know, what if I tried this? What if I tried that? And then he finally decides what he should be. And I guess you'd have to read the book to see if he wins the contest or not. But okay. I'll tell you, it's a lot of discovery through the evolution of using your creativity. And one of the things that our daughters faced a lot is the what if situation, and what if this, what if that, and they'll go down a spiral Sophia in particular. What if this happens? What if this happens? And sometimes that evolution can take you in a negative form. And so we tried to make it so it can, but there are ways around it if you just think a little creatively. And that's where Spaghetti Monster decided to do in the story.
I love it. I love it. Yeah. You know, one of the things that I'm really delighted that my Alejandra was able to develop was the ability to look, instead of going down that rabbit hole of what if next, what if what? She is able to sit back and go, this is going to make a really good story someday.
That's amazing.
And it really is. And well, she used to come out and she would tour with me. She went to a really unique high school, an international high school here in Boston, and she wasn't one of the international kids. So they would get, instead of a week vacation, they get like a month off. And so she would come out on the road with me. Dylan, imagine a 16-year-old daughter decides, yeah, I'm going to get in a van and drive around the country with my dad for 3 weeks at a time. It was wonderful. It was great.
Awesome.
But you know, you've run into these crazy things, and there was many occasions where we'd be stuck on the road or whatever, you know, with the hotel lost our reservation, and my dog look at me and say, yeah, someday this is going to make a good story.
You know, that's an awesome way to look at it.
It's always good when chaos happens because you get a great story out of it and it's memorable. When the trip goes off perfect and doesn't have any hiccups and it's just normal, it's all right. It was fun, but there's no story.
Right.
When chaos ensues, you have a good story to tell from it and a good memory, even if it was a bad chaos that you look back on it fondly, you know?
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm looking, you have about one of your illustrations as the background, and that chaos is a fun chaos is kind of what I'm seeing. Is that typically your style?
So, a lot of my drawings kind of follow the same kind of style. It is a little more open-ended. Some of the illustrations are a little more chaotic and a little more roughly drawn for kind of showing the fun and the place for it. And this scene is definitely the most chaotic of it. It's the actual party itself. Uh-huh. And it's definitely more, I really enjoyed developing this illustrative style. And the eyeballs, I think, are what kind of been sticking out for me, is these different, like, large, oversized eyes with imperfect circles inside of it. And I think it's important to kind of, especially with kids, to get an idea of, not everything has to be perfect. Imperfect circles are great. Having some imperfections in it makes it unique and makes it fun.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Alejandra, in creating this book, did you use that child psychology background to be able to craft the story to challenge kids to think think through problems?
So yes, a lot of that was thinking about how to overcome and maybe do it a little more creatively. But one of the things we actually did was sit with our daughters and go through, how would you overcome this situation in that age group, right? Like, what would you really think through in this position? And it really did help us kind of evolve the story to be like, oh, would you actually come up with this? Or what do you think would happen here? And I think that really did help. I'd say the psychology background does help. And the next book is exploring more about the what ifs, which is where I'll be using it a lot more, I will say. But yeah, this was just a fun book. That one of the things we do a lot is read for our daughters' classrooms. You know how you could go to the classroom and read? And every year, Dylan and I would go at two different times and surprise our daughters and read, you know, since they were in kindergarten. And they loved when we would make the sounds and the evolution of the stories. And one of our inspirations, you know, a lot, Dr. Seuss is one of the ones that we love to read because of the cadence. And Mo Williams is another one that, like, is another one. He did The Pigeon Drives the Bus. And, you know, it's about being fun and energetic. And so when we built this story, it was about making animals and not animals, but kind of looks like animals, but little monsters that have voices and have stories, and you can actually tell the story with emotion. That was one of our big focus, is where someone can read it to a kid and it's silly. It's not something that's really, you know, real, but it's something that feels fun and exciting. So that's how we did it.
Yeah. A lot of the testing was giving it to my amazing wife and having her read it to the kids, or just read it out loud. And then you could tell right away if it sounds right. You know, if she can't make it sound right, then it's not going to sound right by anyone.
Right. Well, you know, my kids are grown, so I read to my kids for a long time, especially my daughter, through, you know, because her her second grade teacher. I was really bummed out when she went into second grade and she's reading on her own. And I'm like, I let her read on her own. And her second grade teacher came up to me and she said, you have to keep reading with her. She's really aggressive, too. And I go, I do? And I was very excited. I'm like, cool. And, you know, so that just, you know, we kept on reading aloud together for a few more years. And then we co-read together and talked about books. And even now it's, you know, talking about movies and whatnot that we see. It's just a wonderful, wonderful thing. And I'm so happy that you guys both are take advantage to go in and read to your kids' classroom. I think every parent who has the opportunity that their kids are going to a school where they welcome parental involvement, man, get involved. Get to know your kids' friends. Get to know their teachers. I don't know if you've picked this up, Dylan, but I loved volunteering to drive the kids. There was anytime, you know, the dance class has to go somewhere, get in my minivan, the football team, get in the minivan. Because I would just sit up there, keep my mouth shut, and drive the car. And I would know everything that was going on in that school by the end of the classroom. I knew who was mad at who and who did this and who did that. It was like super spy, really, really great spy parenting tip. So.
Yes, I do love chauffeuring the kids around. You hear everything, and they just talk. It's so fun. Yep. You're watching Sophia, my oldest, especially engage with her friends. She's in middle school, eighth grade, and it's just so fun watching her, you know, develop into a teenager.
I know. And to your point, the reading to your kids. I mean, we've been reading. Yeah. That was our non-negotiable. We were like, every night we're reading 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever we can get in before they fall asleep. We're reading books, and it started with, you know, the little cardboard books that are like maybe 5 pages or 10 pages. But that led to, I mean, even now they still want us to read to them. I mean, to have an eighth grader go, oh, mommy, can you read it with the voices? Like, that's not something that is normal in that aspect, right? But it keeps the communication lines open and it makes it fun. And actually, one of my daughter's fifth grade teachers, who I thought was really amazing, in their classroom, they had picture books. And the teacher encouraged the kids, even though as they're older, to read picture books, because sometimes you need that little getaway and you need to have fun and not everything is so serious. And I thought that was a really good thing that the teacher did, because it is real. You know, we're so quick to grow up. Our kids are so quick to grow up. And then once you hit 18, it's like, now you're an adult. So what now? I can't have fun anymore? That's not the truth. I mean, we're still big adults ourselves, big kids, I guess. Big kids ourselves. So, thumbs up. We're big kids ourselves.
Yes. I love that. Yeah, yeah. And yeah, being able to have fun and continue to have fun and be goofy as parents, it's a wonderful gift to your kids. And like you said, when the kids want you to stay goofy and do things with you, there were a lot of people in my life said, oh, you know, when your kid gets to be 10, 11, 12, they're not going to want to do this. And I didn't find that at all. My kids wanted us to be involved in our lives, and it's a good thing. And, yeah, so parents, don't listen to all that nonsense.
Yeah.
Your kids.
Yeah. Keep hanging out with your
kids.
Be
a kid and play with your kids. It's fun.
Yeah. Sometimes it's fun to just, you know, sit and draw monsters or read a picture book together at the bookstore, even though you're picking out maybe not so much of a kid's book, because our 13-year-old was reading Harry Potter in second grade. So, you know, we were like, all right, I think maybe the reading to you worked, because now you want to read these, you know, bigger books as you get older. But now she's back into graphic novels.
Yeah, she's reading comic books.
And I just want to take your time. I made a mistake. I didn't realize when my son was reading manga and anime and graphic novels, I didn't appreciate. I supported it. I took him out. We brought him every time I went on a trip, came home, brought him a graphic novel or manga. But I would always, not always, but oftentimes we'd go in his room and go, dude, could you please read a book without a picture in it? Just one. I didn't appreciate the fact that graphic novels is reading. And it's great literature. So I always want to remind parents not to make the mistake I made and really support your kids' reading, because it is good reading and there's really great stuff happening.
Agreed. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. Dylan, any thought of creating a Spaghetti Monster graphic novel?
Ooh, yeah, I could do that. That could be fun.
All right.
I would definitely lean on Sophia, my oldest, because she's really into the graphic novels and kind of help support me with that. But I loved comic books when I was a kid. Uh-huh. So, I could do that. That'd be
now
fun.
Now she loves comic books.
Yeah, now she loves comic books. She's joining the first instance of having a comic book series where she has to wait for the next edition.
Ooh,
lot of this generation, we don't have to wait anymore. Everything's instant. So yep. She's having to wait, you know, weeks sometimes for the next edition of the comic book to come out. And it's fun watching her go through that.
Yeah. Well, she's probably like me. I love streaming series on TV. If a series comes out and I wait until they're all out. And then I just binge them all at the same time.
Yes. That's me for sure.
Yeah. Except she will actually watch the after shows and the breakdown of everything and all that stuff too. So.
Well, she has more time. Well, she has a longer attention span than I do.
Yes. Me too.
Alejandro, I don't know if you just realized it, but Dylan just made a commitment to go from 32 threads to like 1,500. So,
you know, I made note right here because, you know, we don't forget. You know, you're married to a Puerto Rican, so, you know, we don't forget.
We don't.
We might not always be on time, but we don't forget.
Pat, I'm going to keep my mouth shut so I don't make it. Before we run out of time, we should tell everybody where they can go to find out more about Spaghetti Monster and the Halloween Party and find out more about both of you.
Yeah, so we actually have a site, themonsterbob.com, and then the book itself, Spaghetti Monster and the Halloween Party, is on Amazon.
Awesome.
And our author pages are on there so you can get some more access to it. And I have a YouTube and a TikTok where I do cooking videos, a lot of Latin related, called The Busy Mommy, BUSYMAMI. And I took that as a addition for ways to expand the culture, right? To showcase that you can still do that. And then I talk about being a busy mom and being all the things. So that's another reason why Spaghetti Monster is so related to our kids, because really, I mean, what is our lives without our kids, really?
Yes.
Amen. Amen. Yes. I miss being a dad to little kids. I love my grown-up kids. They are wonderful adults. They're successful. They're caring, and I'm incredibly proud of them. My niece, who I adore, is in college, so we still get to do some kids stuff with her, but she is also somebody that I'm very proud of. But I do miss being a dad to young ones. So
much fun.
We have a neighbor that's 2, and every once in a while we get to hang out with him, so that's fun. But Alejandro, I just learned how to make asopal de pollo.
I love asopal.
Qué rico.
Wait, can you start telling Dylan he should learn more Spanish? We've been together 25 years. Debe de hablar español.
Come on, Dylan, qué pasó? Don't you want to know what your wife's talking to you about? That was the motivation for me.
The crazy part is I can understand her almost perfectly, but then I have a hard time, especially with the Puerto Rican Spanish. It's a lot faster, but I can't speak it. I'm so bad, and I really should practice because it's important to learn other languages, and I should take that to heart and do it.
He's committed
I'm committed to a graphic novel and learning
graphic
Spanish.
Graphic novel and learning Spanish. All right. There we go.
It's a win-win.
Jed, you're my favorite person ever. I don't know if you know that. Can we have all discussions in front of you moving forward?
We can hang out all the time, Alejandro.
Perfect.
Hey, just one real quick. What do the girls think about being the inspiration for this series?
Oh, they love it. They love it. Lily, my youngest, is always pointing out which monster she created. They also help design some of the different costumes that he tries on. And they each have their own costumes, and they will point out which ones that they helped create. And they both have ideas for the next book. We've been working on their own individual books and their own individual stories. And I'm excited to make them happen. So they love it, and I love it as well.
Well, we love it, and you have an open invitation to come back and celebrate those books and celebrate the graphic novel, and you can come back on. We'll celebrate when you start learning some bad words.
Yeah, maybe we'll bring your wife on, too, and we'll just all speak in Spanish the whole time. Maybe we'll talk about some recipes. Yeah. In one of the books, Spaghetti Monster is going to be doing a recipe. Exactly. We're going to do a Day of the Dead book, and maybe he'll be making some some Mexican, some tamales, and maybe some arroz con gandules for the Puerto Rican side.
That's, there you go. And the, isn't there a great a pan de muerto?
Pan de muerto, yep. It's so good.
Yeah.
So good. But yeah, no, I love it.
We've had a great time speaking to the authors and illustrator of Spaghetti Monster and the Halloween Party. Our guests have been Dylan and Alejandra Phillips. My friends, thanks so much for being on Reading with Your Kids.
Oh, thank you so much, Jed, for having us.
Thank you.
So happy. Can't wait to come back. Hasta luego. Hasta la próxima.
Sí. Hey, families, would you like to share a miracle with your kids? At the Wolf Conservation Center, hope was fading. The endangered Mexican wolves dreamed of a pup, but none had come. Until one tiny miracle changed everything. Meet Trumpet, a real-life wolf pup whose incredible birth brought joy, hope, and a lesson in conservation. Trumpet the Miracle Wolf, written by Leocadia George, is a heartwarming true story that will inspire your whole family. Teach your kids the power of hope, love, and protecting endangered species. Get your copy today and join the wild adventure. This episode is brought to you by onceuponadance.com. Ignite imagination with award-winning dance and movement books. Once Upon a Dance inspires young readers to twirl, leap, and dream with whimsy and wonder. Whether your child enjoys unicorns, bats, zombies, or cats, Once Upon a Dance has a dance-it-out story to get them moving. For more information about this 37 delightful books, please visit onceuponadance.com or find them on your favorite social media platform. Join us right now from the beautiful city of Detroit in Michigan. Our guest is here today to celebrate the Aleph Bet collection. It's a collection of seven different books celebrating a love of the Hebrew language and the culture of heaven. Please welcome to the show, Yoel Ben Yisrael. Hey, Yoel, how are you?
Hey, everybody. How y'all doing? Good to see y'all. Good to be in conversation with you, Jed. Thank you for having me on, my friend. I appreciate you, sir.
You are very, very welcome. I'm incredibly curious about you and this collection. So why don't we first start with you telling us what the Aleph Bet collection is all about?
Yes. Yes, sir. So, man, it started with a conversation that that my wife and I had. Essentially, the conversation sparked within me this idea to like venture off into children's books. So one of my first books is called Thoughts of a Kingdom Citizen, Earth Needs Heaven. And after I wrote that, it's kind of like a small like memoir type of book, like an ebook. Throughout this conversation, I was like, man, like I wonder if there are any books out there that talk about the Hebrew language in such a way to where it is relatable to the next generation, like Gen Z, Generation Alpha, and perhaps potentially millennials too, and the parents who read these books, but also who put the culture of heaven, the kingdom of heaven's culture at the forefront as well too, like love, joy, and peace, and loving your neighbor as yourself, and things of this nature. And I couldn't really find any, just searching. And so I was like, man, like what I want to do is I want to author these. There was a person that I think her name is Toni K. Bambara that said, if you don't find a book that you've seen that's written, then you have to write it. Also in conjunction with that, with me being a huge word nerd and wording out within the Hebrew language, what I find out is that within the Bible, there's a lot of Hebraic wordplay. There are a lot of puns that we don't see in English, but we do see within the Hebrew. And so I thought it'd be like a cool, like innovative idea, fun idea, an engaging idea to create these characters, these colorful characters who are nuanced and three-dimensional, and they're human beings. And they're trying their best to embrace the culture of heaven, but at the same time to just have interspersed throughout these seven books a bunch of like Hebraic alliteration and Hebraic wordplay and puns for the kids to get and for them to kind of chuckle at as they learn this narrative that teaches them about the Hebrew language and how beautiful it is. And it simultaneously puts the heaven's culture at the forefront as well, too.
So before people who are listening and thinking to themselves, well, Hebrew, That's the language they speak in Israel. So Jewish folks. So this episode's not for me. So I'm gonna hit stop. But tell me why everybody should be interested in learning a little bit more about the Aleph Bet collection.
Yes, sir. And so I didn't leave y'all out. So the person who said like, "Nah, this ain't for me," like, so hold on real quick, right? So please let me explain. So within this book, it is a hybridization. So it is Hebrew, but there's also English in there as well. So what I've tried to do my best is every time you see Hebrew, you're going to see the English transliteration, and you're also going to see the English translation as well, too. So you'll get a chance to read along with it as well. And you can also you can understand the flow of it as you're reading also. But the reason why I believe that this book transcends whether it be like Hebrew speakers or those who just speak Hebrew and or those who speak English or transcends all languages is because for me, I feel like the Kingdom of Heaven's culture, it transcends everything, gender, socioeconomic status, ethnicity, of a religious background, because what I'm seeing, Jed, is when I talk to different people, we're all looking for the same thing, right? We were all looking for peace. We would love for the world to be a paradisiac, utopian place, to where there's no more killing, there's no more dying, nobody's getting sick, there's no racism, there's no prejudice, there's no sexism, there's no ageism or genderism. All these isms are just disappearing, right? And they're gone. And we live in a place to where if I need something from you, like I need a cup of water, like there's nothing wrong with that, and vice versa. We're all loving each other in a way that reflects heaven's culture. And so this is why I think it transcends just like, oh man, like this is it's a Hebrew class that I didn't ask for, when like essentially it's I'm using the vehicle of Hebrew to deliver a bigger package to you and to your home and to your heart. And that's this transcendent culture of the culture of heaven and the intangibles that exist within the Kingdom of Heaven as well.
So are we talking about heaven from a Jewish faith tradition, Christian faith tradition, or Muslim faith tradition, or a combination of all of the above?
So this is a man. And this is why I want to be on a podcast. You ask very, very great questions and very, very interesting questions too. So I would say, so it's actually none of the above, right? Oh. So when I have been studying the kingdom, studying heaven, what I realized, and I didn't realize until I got 32 years old, is that when I was a kid, I used to think heaven was this like, you know, this fairy tale place where when we die, we get this VIP cloud and we get our own personal harp and we are plucking the harp and we have our we're floating around and we have wings and we're doing all this stuff in heaven. But the more and more that I study it out, Jed, whether it be from the pages of the Bible, the Old Testament and the New Testament, and just look researching other people like Dr. Miles Monroe, heaven is literally a government. It's called the Kingdom of Heaven. And what I see the Bible preaching and teaching to us is that the Kingdom of Heaven was the original culture of the first people of Adam and Eve as well. And this essentially was supposed to be spread throughout the entirety of the world, but there was a plot twist that happened, and that's why we see so much craziness in the world today, sin, death, and murdering and all these things, because we've fallen away from the original government. My notion is that what's really wrong with the world is crooked government. If we had a perfect government to where everybody was, all the government officials were just, they had the people's interest at heart, and they were benevolent people. They were not malicious people. They can't be bought out by money. Then everybody's lives from Cali to Australia, they would all be so much more wholesome and so much more fulfilling and prosperous as well, right? And so that's my understanding of heaven, is that it is a literal government that we can be citizens of, and it is the most, from what I've seen, the most beautiful culture that will ever exist.
Well, I'm certainly a big believer in creating a culture of heaven here on earth, of loving everybody as our loving ourselves first, loving everybody as ourselves. All one my favorite part of the New Testament. I grew up and I am Catholic, so I can't quote letter and verse. But I love when they were trying to trip up Jesus and say, okay, what's the most important commandment? He just came back with love God, love each other. You take care of that. Everything else, you got it.
That's right. That's right. Absolutely. And it's like that, man, like that is the crux of it all, right? Like just imagine if we all just did that for just one, just a 24-hour time span. If we all just love God, we love the King of Heaven, King Yahweh, and we love our neighbor as ourselves, what would the evening news have to report on? Like, oh, well, so-and-so was nice to this lady at the market. Back to you at 7 p.m. for more. Like, what would that would really change the whole news cycle. But we don't see that that's our reality. But just imagine just for one day. We did that, how radical of a change that would be of our interaction with perfect strangers. It would be paradise, really. It would be paradise, and it would be a utopian situation that would happen with humankind.
Yeah. I had a pastor at my church who had to retire. He's still with us here on earth, but he sat down with me once and he said, I think that we experience heaven when I treat you with love and respect and you treat me the same way. And that moment, that interaction, we're actually in heaven.
Wow. Yes. Yes. Absolutely. That's absolutely right, Jay, because what I'm realizing is when talking to people and reading the Bible, reading the scriptures as well, too, and I see that people are really chasing utopia. We are pursuing a utopia because this is why, I say this a lot. This is why I think that we love superheroes and superhero movies so much. My personal favorite would have to be Spider-Man at the moment. Or Peter Parker, this mild-mannered guy who like gets bit by the spider. Now he's like just this super Spider-Man. He's this web-slinging hero guy. But I think that we love superheroes so much is because when something bad happens in the context of a superhero movie, there's almost like this peace that we get because we know that, well, okay, the superhero, the Superman, the Spider-Man, the Batman, the Hulk, the Avengers, they're going to swoop in and they're going to have dominion over this situation. And that's what we were originally created to have. You and I were created to have dominion and over situations, circumstances, and predicaments that happen to us, right? So when something bad happens, if somebody gets sick, we see in the Bible, the Messiah, he's able to go, he's able to heal that person. When somebody dies, he's able to resurrect that person. He's in, this why he's cool as a cucumber when him and his disciples are in this boat. And it's rocking and the waves are going and he's sleeping. Like, and they're like, do you not care what else? Like, we about to die over here and you over here, you taking a full nap, a whole nap. And they're like, man, you have little faith. And he just speaks to the wind and the waves and there's this great calm. And they ask a very important question that I think it behooves us to ask is, what kind of man is this? And I think the answer to that is, it's the type of man or human being that we were originally created to be. And so we are searching for this lost paradise, this lost utopian scenery that we once had. And that's what I see with not just me, but the entire human race, is that we are still searching for this paradise because there's, I think, in the deep recesses of our heart, mind, and soul, we want to go back to a place to where everything was perfect and there was perfect harmony laterally between human being and human being. And it was perfect harmony vertically between us and our creator as well.
Man. Tell us about the seven books. Who are we going to meet in the books and what kind of stories are we going to experience?
Oh my gosh, yes, yes. So these are some very, very cool characters, man. So the seven books you have, so you have Adam and the Red Ruby is one of them. And so all these books, they all have this like alliteration to them. So with Adam, Adam and the Red Ruby is about this guy this young kid who he's walking around one day and he stumbles serendipitously, so it seems, upon this Red Ruby. And a tidbit is Adam loves the color red. And the reason why I did that is because within the Hebrew language, the word Adam and the word Adom, they both have this phonetic like similarities to them. And so that's the Hebraic wordplay there as well too. And so all throughout this story, he's like he's falling in love with different things that are red, and he falls upon probably his biggest love of all, the shiny big red ruby. But throughout the course of the story, there's something happens that introduces him to the culture of heaven even more so, right? So you got Adam, you got Benjamin as well, who is fascinated with his father's job. His father is like he works in this really tall building, and it's called Benjamin and the building, and he is just fascinated. He wants to replicate his father's this tall architecture with stones. But there's something that happens along that line too that gets him to learn more about, well, man, like there's an element of the culture of heaven that I need to implement into my life as well too. You have this person called Gamaliel, who him and his family they go on this trip to Somalia in Africa, and it's called Gamaliel and the camel, or Gamaliel and Gamal. And they're on this search for this lost camel. They see some footprints within the sand, and the story kicks off from there too. That's a really, really cool one as well. So I'm trying to not spoil the whole thing for y'all. Yeah. As well. You got Hoshea as well. It's called in Hebrew Hoshea Hodeni Hayom, which means Hoshea, teach me today. And it's about this kid who is basically an autodidact. He learns different skills. He acquires different skills throughout the story. And that's to encourage kids to say that you can really do anything that you put your mind to as well, too. And then the last couple ones are you have Daniel and the whale. And he makes his whale for his community. And some people love it. They think it's the best thing since sliced manna. And some people don't love it quite as much. So there's some tension within that story as well. And then you also have Shaul. In Hebrew it's called Shaul Shualim Ushe Lot, which is Shaul the foxes and questions. And so he sees these animals for the first time in his life, and he's very curious about these foxes. And so he peppers his parents about, like, why are the foxes doing this, or why are they doing that, or why do they eat this, or what's that sound that they're making, why did their ear perk up like that when something happens? So all those things happen throughout that narrative as well too. So I try my best to make it as engaging, as entertaining as well, and colorful to capture the audience, but also to put the culture of heaven within there as well to help people see that there's a culture out there that can really help humanity as man and woman, child, son, and things of that nature.
Now, I saw on your website that you think that this collection would be especially helpful for homeschooling parents.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, it's funny because that was a touch by my wife too, because she's a homeschool teacher as well too, so she teaches virtually also. But yes, I think personally, and I could be biased, but I think personally that it's good for homeschool because homeschoolers are looking for literature that can introduce them to different cultures, different concepts, different ideas. And I think that these collection of books can definitely be something you can add to your homeschool curriculum, because it talks about, man, just so many things, to kindness, to love, to having joy, to dealing with frustration, to loving your neighbor as yourself, as you and I talked about, as well. And so, there's a book, called, Tobia that talks about loving your neighbor as yourself as well, too. And so I think that it'd be excellent to add to a homeschool curriculum because it really introduces kids really of all ages that to these characteristics that will really bless them as they interact with people as well too.
Yeah. And you know, one of the things that I love to point out, it's been a while since I've done it, but in reality, we're all homeschool, or we all should be homeschool parents, even if our kids are going to public school, going to private school, going to a religious school, they're still coming home to us, and we should be the ones who are continuing that education. And especially when it comes to values and faith, it's yes. that's our job. Yes. And so if you think that this is a collection of books that would help you do that with your kids, you should definitely check it out. Are you looking to add more books to the collection?
Absolutely. Yes. Yes, sir. So, this is a great question as well too. So within the Hebrew alphabet, there are 22 letters in totality, right? From Aleph all the way to the letter Tau. And so, there's going to be a total of 22 books. And so volume 2 is in the works. I'm working on like manuscripts now. And so they're going to be seven in the volume 1. They're going to be 8 in volume 2, and then another 7 in the last volume, volume 3 as well. So I'm working on volume 2 and getting characters together as well too. For the most part, for volume 1, it's like really like boy heavy. All the main characters are boys. But what I'm gonna do is it's mixed up and have some girls in there too, have them be the main characters and bring them to the forefront as well. So that's gonna be really, really fun to write, and I'm looking forward to getting my creative juices going to crank out some more content for the next generation as well.
Excellent. Well, we should tell everybody where they can go to find out more about the Alphabet Collection and find out more about you.
Yeah, absolutely. So you all can check out setapartkingdomprep.com. That's setapartkingdomprep.com. And on the homepage, man, you'll find everything. You'll find the Alphabet Collection there. And you'll find all 7 books. We have special bundles for you guys to check out as well. Printouts. There are coloring sheets. There are word puzzles as well for you to learn Hebrew and for you to dive into the language if you want to even more. And also, if you all want to check me out, I also have the luxury and the privilege of podcasting and being the host as well as Jed is doing phenomenally. I have a podcast called the Kingdom Basura Podcast, and that's where I talk more about the Kingdom of Heaven. And I talk about life in general, basically. I talk about life through the lens of the culture of heaven and what's going on in the world and how we can get solace and how we can get shalom or peace from all the craziness that's going on around us, and knowing that there is a creator out there who knows us and who loves us and who wants us all to win and prosper at the end of the day.
We've had a really interesting time speaking to the author of the Alphabet Collection. Our guest has been Yoel Ben Yisrael. Yoel, shalom. Thanks for being on Reading with the Kids.
Shalom. Thank you so very much. This was so very fun. I appreciate you, Jed. Thank you so much.
We are so very happy that you decided to spend part of your day with us here at Reading with Your Kids. If this episode made you smile or gave you something to think about, please pass it on. Share the link with your friends, leave a 5-star review, and hit that subscribe button so you can join us for the next episode. And if you haven't done so already, please check out readingwithyourkids.com. It is the hub for all things Reading with Your Kids, including learning how you can be a guest here on the show and tell thousands of Kidlit fans all over the world about your fantastic children's book. I want to give a really big heartfelt thanks to today's guest, Dylan and Alejandra Phillips. Please be sure to check out Spaghetti Monster and the Halloween Party. Also want to thank Yoel Ben Yisrael. Please be sure to check out Alphabet, the Alphabet Collection. I want to thank my team, Fatima Khan, Chris Daugherty. I want to thank my beautiful wife for all the support she gives me. Most of all, we all want to thank you. You are making the world a smarter, kinder, more empathetic place. And you do that every time you read with your kids. I'll be looking for you in the next episode of Reading with Your Kids.
Let's light up the night. Come on. In a world that can be heavy, we lift each other high with a spark in our hearts. We reach for the sky. Hand in hand, we're stronger, breaking every
find our light, chase the shadows away. Every voice is a treasure, a melody so pure. In this dance of acceptance, we find the cure. Lifting spirits higher, feeling so alive. In a world that embraces, we thrive and we strive. No one left behind, we'll dance forever. In this beautiful chaos, let your colors unfold. In the warmth of our hearts, we're brave and bold. So lift your chin up, let the world see your light. In this beautiful world, together we shine.